modo da parlare,
vita,
le cose cambiano. E come lo chiamo, perché? Io ho appena di... da... il cane. Da... taman. Di cacai. Di... cacai mufoko. Di... momo dakal jiwa tata tadai muang amuk pinag isap di iti hidu di sini tak wala kono hingga tumuduk di dia sini ini di sini amu di isap iti hidu di sini tak mula tak ini
This one is called the Tassadai Tape, and the Tassadai were a group of hunter-gatherers in the Philippines contacted and found in 1971 in southern Mindanao, and they became very famous. National Geographic and NBC produced even a TV documentary because they were living in the 70s, but using tools from the Stone Age, and just there were just 26 people wearing leaves around, only leaves, and had kind of a Paleolithic lifestyle. And it was a bit strange that just 30 kilometers from there was a village with other people living, and they didn't know about them. So they were quite isolated and hidden in the jungle, and it was during the Vietnam War, and this quite it looked like a paradise actually, and they became very famous in the US and also in Europe later on, and even people used the name Tassadai, like some hippie or flower people used the names to give it to their children, so on. So
what were the names? Like, how were the kids called?
One is called Lobo Tassadai, and he was always photographed swinging between, like, Tarzan
style.
Yeah. And others were, there was one called Belayam, who was always doing mimicry of the photographers that came. Mm. So he would also look like taking photos of the photographers, but only with gestures.
You know, Lobo, the name Lobo in Portuguese means wolf. Ah, so it would, okay. In Portuguese would be like Wolf Tassadai. And there's even this boy Mowgli, who was supposedly raised by wolves, right? By a she-wolf or something.
Yeah, I mean, this group really absolutely... At one point it was... People thought, like, if it's real... Is it really real? And but they were so friendly and so nice that everybody who got there was really impressed. And even Gina Lolo Brigida went there. She was invited, and other famous people, but also anthropologists like Irenaeus Eibel Eibersfeld, an Austrian anthropologist, went there and filmed with a hidden mirror to see Stone Age behavior.
What do you mean, like a hidden mirror? Ah, so he would not be seen.
Yeah, he expected then that people wouldn't see him. He was pointing the camera into the jungle, but at the same time he would film into the cave, because there was a 90 degree mirror in front of the lens.
Mm-hmm. Tricky.
Yeah. But the problem was, it was all kind of orchestrated by a millionaire who lived in Manila and who cared a lot about minorities in the Philippines. And only through him people could be invited, and news teams also had to pay to his organization to film these people. And some got a bit suspect about the way he behaves. But the good thing is that he managed to produce an area for the Tassadai, so there could not be logging roads, and they were quite kind of protected.
Yeah.
But and this tape I'm presenting here was recorded hidden inside the cave, because when the first foreigners arrived, they didn't know exactly if they would disturb them, and then that's why they used a hidden tape recorder in order to see if they would be disturbed. But now, why is the tape still there, and why is it kind of important for me? It's because in the 80s, the Tassadai case became kind of the biggest hoax in anthropological history.
Who are you, by the way?
Me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm Clemens von Wiedemeyer, and I'm an artist, and I'm doing a show next week in Sao Paulo in Paso das Artes about first contacts in anthropology, but in an artistic manner.
What is the title of the show?
It's called The Fourth Wall.
The Fourth Wall. Is there a Portuguese translation? Will they translate it or not?
Yes, there is.
O quarto muro, ou a quarta parede?
Parede.
Parede?
Uh-huh.
A quarta parede no Paço das Artes, que é um museu de arte contemporânea. Não, não é um museu, né? Um espaço de arte contemporânea dentro da cidade universitária, na USP. Venham todos. When is the opening?
On the 4th of October.
4th of October. Okay, soon.
Yeah.
Let's go on with the story of the Tassadai people.
They were only 26, and after this reserve that was installed, they the Tassadai weren't contacted again for 15 years, because there was a civil war in the Philippines, and only in the 80s a Swiss journalist managed to reach the cave, but the Tassadai had disappeared. The caves were empty, and people lived around in villages, and so he interviewed them, and he came up with the story that everything was a hoax, that it was just staged in the 70s for the journalists, and larger discussions evolved, and also a conference in Belgrade, I think, about this case. And this tape was used then to explain that the Tassadai were real and authentic, because the language would be different from the villages around, and also different to other parts.
Do you know what they actually used? Was it like a cassette tape or magnetic tape?
Yeah, magnetic tape.
Magnetic tape.
Yeah.
So hidden somewhere in the cave.
Yes.
Someone went there without being seen, pressed record, and left the cave. That's
totally.
Kind of...
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
I mean, they said like on the, it was actually the March 26, 1972, and this millionaire, Elizalde, thought of leaving a tape recorder running in the cave. And he borrowed a small portable unit from another guy and put it inside a black leather bag with some other clothes. And so they just said they leave it there beside the fire to dry, and because everyone was sitting around the fire, so it's kind of a barbecue recording. they started it and came during the next morning or something.
Let's listen to them a little bit.
Yeah,
Adonai kari ne madavad jimom nakar ne umashu.
Sounds a bit like a sort of a religious chant or something. Do you know what that actually is?
Well, I really didn't study the tape completely, but there's a complete translation of the tape, and I can look it up for you and tell you tomorrow. But
so tomorrow, chapter 2 of Tasadai people.
But they are mostly talking about, they're really talking about the visitors and also about this millionaire, and they call him Big Uncle always. And he became kind of God for them. And so they would always, like when he come, they would like try to catch him and...
hug him and
yeah, and he's also singing besides, and we just heard this song, and here, what is said like the sun? What is said it falls close? What are called rays of the sun, and so on. He sang a song around. He sang about the sun and the moon.
It's kind of what you would expect.
From this kind of mythologies religious.
Well, I just, you know, it's an interesting thing if you look at the side of the producer, if you think it's a fake and it's staged, you have to come up with a choreography in a way that's realistic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a bit like, you know, this whole issue about, you know, did they land on the moon or not? And this kind of whole, you know, how would you fake it? So you have to put a little bit of thinking into it, don't you, if you wanted to make something like this.
So worshipping sun and moon, you can't really go wrong.
No, that's pretty universal, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, what also struck me was when there was a guy who sung in the cave and who started doing mimicry, how would you produce a theater, live theater performance kind of, and inside, like in Shakespeare's Hamlet, you have a different, another guy who acts. So you have like the whole acting, and then there would be an actor who does a kind of meter and does fun of himself. So it would be quite difficult, but of course, always in this case is also with the moon. Is like there are the guys who say like the better it looks like, the better it's being done, the less it can't be true, you know.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you really have to kind of find the balance point between lo-fi and. But you know, it's quite a difficult thing, isn't it?
Because
you know, I think probably if this was not done properly, you say this was done in a cave.
Yeah.
But how far inside the cave? Because this is obviously not very far in. Because what you hear in the background is all the cicadas that presumably don't sit inside the cave.
No, actually it's only it's an opening, and they made this fire at the opening, and then the jungle would, so it's a kind of hill, and the jungle is just in front of the cave. It's like a window.
I quite like that, actually, trying to find, you know, in the actual sound quality, what, you know, if even like the technology used to, you know, to record and stuff, if it's appropriate or not to the story. And actually then we kind of try to like listen through and a sort of forensic, you know, forensic of the material. Okay, where could that be? Could really be a cave? Maybe you can even like estimate how many meters down or something this.
I think you can do this all today. I mean, there is this subject of sonic archaeology, of people who are trying to figure out how to how things might have sounded long time ago when there was no way of recording. I mean, of course, you can look into recordings and earlier recordings and deduct things, but you can also think of other possibilities where sound has manifested itself in some other ways. There's people, for example, who think that in certain, you know, fast-setting substances like mortar and concrete or something like that, you know, certain types of mud or whatever, you might be able to find traces of sounds that happened at that time. So it's a bit of research done into this at the moment, and also into sonic properties of congregation rooms and stuff like that, you know, from the Bronze Age and Iron Age, you know, if they had certain properties that lend themselves to what was going on.
What I wonder is your interest in this tape, because for sure you have this fascinating true and untrue, and this going towards strange cultures or this anthropological view on other on the strange and so on, but that it is a fake, it's allowing us to think about ourselves somehow. Or what is the interest of you in this?
Well, it actually started with an exhibition I was doing at the Barbican Centre in London, and then I came across, and I wanted to do something that is like the farthest away thing, the most isolated thing from London, which is such a like a melting pot. And I thought about like still isolated communities in the jungle, and also in Brazil and Peru there are some groups. And then I came across this case of the Philippines. And then I started developing some videos, some works, and one, I wanted to do a theater piece on the in the Barbican, because they have really nice theater in a concrete environment. And so I wanted to kind of use these tapes for actors to restage something, using the stage as a cave. So that's why I became interested in the tapes, but I didn't find them. And I did something else, and then after the exhibition only, by an accident, I found them on the internet. They were all uploaded, but hidden, kind of hidden website, and I managed to download, but they were all cut in little pieces, because they were just used as examples of the language, like even syllables or single words. So I downloaded them all, were like 1,000 files or something, and then I put them together again on a timeline.
Did you find the theory? The way how it was originally?
Like the timeline, the actual timeline.
Yeah, yeah, they were just numerated, 1 to 900 or something.
So is that what makes like the tiny clips, like the...
Yeah.
That we can hear?
Yeah.
Wow, that's like...
I mean, I could have also asked this professor in Hawaii who uploaded it, but then I thought that I don't make it too complicated.
What if he says no? Then it's all ruined.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah,
this
if I can just the interest in these tapes. Now you told me that.
Okay.
The theater, and you have this double theater. You have the theater in this barbecue or the
barbecue.
And you have this theater.
There's also a
would
barbecue.
Have been done for maybe done for this, or you have this section, and you try then to find this. Can you precise this more?
Well, yeah, actually, it's not very precise, and the exhibition. And my interest is kind of goes here and there, and there's not a final thing. Also, as the topic is so vast, like there are many things that interested me through this research, and I decided just to go in several directions and not one. Mm-hmm. So this tape was only one possible direction, and I, at one point, as an artist or filmmaker, I was so drawn into this research that I at one point also forgot what I really wanted. Kind of. So that's why maybe I brought this here, because I didn't use it in the exhibition at the end. Mm-hmm. But maybe it can be used in the future.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, that's what something Anya, Toby Meyer's partner, was telling us the other day, that she feels, you know, sometimes research-based art, the research becomes so overwhelming, you know, and so interesting, and there are all these stories, then it really becomes a problem where it becomes, you know, this like formalized way to show it, like how do you show it? So I'm quite happy you're showing this in the radio, which is quite nice. It's like a nice unfolding of the material, and it just seems like the right platform, medium for it. Yeah.
And the show also consists of very different material. Like there's a 16mm film, found footage from YouTube clips and so on, and a staged HD projection, so it fits to this idea of not doing a solo show which is coherent in one direction, but to open up and do a kind of fake group exhibition, that is.
Yeah, there's even this, you know, it's kind of inherent to anthropology also, this idea of the graphism, so they talk about the vision machine, you know, like these anthropologists who built like little huts to disguise their cameras inside it, or like now you're telling about this tape recorder, whatever, that it was hidden in a leather bag, you know, by the fireplace or something, by the bonfire. You know, so there's all like this disguising of the technology used to register something. So yeah, it's it's almost like pretending to be invisible, like this invisible wiring and cables and technology.
But this technology always played a big part in anthropology. Actually, directly from the beginning of sound recording, they brought the recorders everywhere to the world, and like the Lumiere brothers traveled around and filmed everything. This need to document everything was then taken over by the anthropological faculty, and I worked for a while in this Institute for Anthropological Film in Göttingen, Germany, and there you could go as an anthropologist, get a 16mm camera and go to make your field work. So it was kind of technology and anthropology is quite related, I think.
Where could you go to? Anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds very domestic, doesn't it? Really does sound domestic.
Like a family argument or something.
Like some soap, like telenovela. Very early telenovela.
Yeah. Yeah, they are always talking, you know. They never like quiet. And you have these cicadas in the background, which are really a bit like here at the people talking in the biennial building.
Yeah, that we have here on our radio.
Thank you.
this.
Yeah.
Wow. Was it recorded or live?
Live.
Okay.
The microphone is there.
Okay.
Also hidden from public
view.
Yes.
Yeah.
And disguised. Disguised.
Yes. Yeah. And every morning we have a first contact. Yeah.
Okay.
At 9?
At 10. Morning at 10 there's a first contact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It always seems to be the same race though that comes and visits. It'd be really funny if one morning it switches on automatically, this thing,
all
at
right.
10 in the morning.
Okay.
From you know, whatever happens at night, mm-hmm. and then at 10 it's like an automatic switch to
mm-hmm.
this. Be really strange if there's suddenly something completely different.
Yeah.
It'd be really nice.
So how many hours of this recording do you have? Is this hours or
minutes? 15 minutes.
50 minutes.
50, yes.
50 minutes. And does it, I was trying to compare it to what we have in the biennial. Does this sound pretty much the same through and through?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's kind of like from now and then there's this singing, but otherwise, it sounds pretty much the same. And there's mostly this guy talking, Belayam, who's the actor and the most, seems to be the most funny person. But he also, they're talking about eating, about food, they're talking about these photographers that came and the big uncle, the millionaire.
The big uncle. There's something about this, you know, like almost like enclaves of the primitive, or enclaves of primitiveness. I guess that's why they attract, like, from celebrities to anthropologists to artists, like a whole like spectrum of people get drawn into this like stories, because they're sort of almost unbelievable nowadays. That's why it's hard to kind of, you know, take for granted, those people are there in the cave or something.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard to, and how that also, you know, this enclaves of primitiveness have their like counterparting to like the modern, you know, it's always...
Well, yeah, it becomes a kind of freak show also, like when everybody goes there, it immediately becomes a kind of exhibition space, like the world fairs in Paris, for example, showing African communities with villages and live people. So then film later took over this part kind of and showing to the Western audience mostly freaky differences. People. So, and even there, the Tassada, I heard that in the villages around, even 1 or 2 years later, they started having a Tassada coming, and they built a fake cave out of papmaché to the local. At the local, I don't know, cultural party or whatever. So it immediately starts that a difference becomes staged, because after the first contact, it's not a difference anymore.
Yeah.
So
we recently went to this Guarani tribe, which is in São Paulo, you know, indigenous people who actually live in like the outskirts of the city. And I was a bit expecting that as well, like, you know, naked people with their painted bodies jumping around, something like this. But actually they had, you know, similar haircuts to the footballers. They all had shirts from the football teams, different ones from south of Brazil, from Rio, from São Paulo, And they did dance. They did do the traditional dance. They speak Guarani. And they go on and on like this. Like this man is doing for hours, you know, just going on and on about their, I don't know, their routines, daily issues, or family arguments, what have you, political problems in Guarani. But they're all dressed, you know, and some like bored kid is listening to an iPod with earphones, and some others texting. But everyone smokes pipes from 7 year old onwards. They all have their own like handcrafted wood pipes. So there's really this mixture, and then you don't really wonder if it's staged, because it's so kind of intertwined and complicated.
Right. What I said wasn't was a bit wrong. Also, maybe it's better to say it looks staged, or because your gaze, are looking at it as a, because you don't know it, and then you filter your own like piece out of it, you know.
Yeah.
Of course they don't stage it.
Yeah, but I mean, when you say there's a cave made out of papier-mâché, it's pretty much like a mise-en-scène, right? There's this thing already.
Yeah. Right. And also in Manila, I heard that they wanted to represent the Tasadai, but they couldn't get, because there were only 26, they couldn't get one of them to Manila, so they just took somebody else and dressed him, or undressed him or her. which is, I don't know, it's a kind of... Well, it's maybe a bit like the Oktoberfest in Munich, you know.
How is that?
when everybody dresses up in leather trousers and plays and gets drunk and plays wild.
How is that in Switzerland? Do you have these
reeds? I mean, if
anywhere in Central Europe you would expect a kind of undiscovered tribe, it would probably be
in one of
the valleys of Switzerland somewhere. Obviously, also the languages are changing there quite rapidly, aren't they?
But I think the really undiscovered tribes, I think, they exist, but they exist somewhere, maybe in Fort, because when I meet people that I don't usually meet through my work, when I work in the hospital or something like this, I wonder really what kind of existence you can have in Switzerland, because it's really, really very strange to me. But this is not people that have been isolated. They are just not on my view, or how you explained it. I don't see it normally, and I don't understand it also. I really some kind of shocked when I have this. But it's not about in the Alps. it's closer. It's much closer, I think.
Here they normally call, like, they, you know, this really isolated tribes, they say uncontacted peoples.
Yeah.
And normally the contact is done, like the visual contact is either like flying over them, and they normally, like the famous photos is like they're shooting with bow and arrow, like towards the plane. This is really like common, or by boat, like going up or down the rivers, and also getting shit.
That really interested me, this idea of taking photos, and this photo isn't a first contact, they say, because they only take the photo to make sure that they're still there and that they aren't yet contacted. So to save them from. This really contradictional.
Yeah. Yeah, and very kind of patronizing as well. It's kind of, okay, also, they're there,
they're
still naked. Uncontacted.
They must be uncontacted if they're still naked.
Yeah. On one hand, they say they do it because to prevent to say, okay, we don't, because apparently the logging and etc. is it's a bigger argument to have these people in the jungle, and then if they weren't there. So, but at the same time, I don't know. I really wondered. I mean, I think it's good, but I also wondered this about this argument of like building fences to save people from contact, and yeah, kind of patronizing and refuse from contact, which is really interesting because you have to make a decision, you know. Because you are responsible for this contact.
Yeah.
But also I think this is the point of view is that there's somebody who has been not contacted. Even this it already says that we have a net of contacts. What is the one who is available? Because otherwise you could say, and this is, I think, something I don't understand in this discussion, okay. that you have already,
yes.
Because I don't believe in this net, what could say, this is the net what contacts, because there's a lot of not fitting communication inside of this. And so it's for me it's strange to have this separation around several groups. But you can say, okay, never has been spoken to or has not common language or I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's also kind of production of otherness because probably the people they are living there and being photographed or have contact to that group which are a bit closer to them and those have contact to them and so on. So at the end there is already this net contact, but you of course you decide this is the furthest away from our so-called civilization.
Yeah.
and then you say, okay, we save this because it's worth it.
Yeah, it's almost looking for like an avant-garde of the primitive, like who's furthest away from the modern, let's say.
Yeah, I think behind is also a paradise idea of the lost paradise. That's
lost
that never really stopped us.
Well, I think also somehow a lot of people think that as soon as there is contact with the Western world, it's getting
dangerous.
I mean, uncontacted basically means unexploited. It's just another bit of whatever medical knowledge that they might have, or another bit of whatever, anything that you can drain off them. You know, that's kind of uncontacted means maybe protected, I don't know. There's a lot in science fiction, isn't there, about this issue?
Yeah, Brave New World is one example.
Mm.
Where you have this Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. Mm. You have a reservation, and it's kind of turned around, so like it's... I forgot exactly, but I think they are excluded from this civilization, but they read Shakespeare inside the reservation, which is forbidden outside. I don't know. So Huxley uses this thing to say, okay, maybe this reservation is the only good existence.
Yeah.
There is this lovely bit in... Stanislaw Lem's, what is it? I can't remember which of his book it is. It's the Ion Tichy, Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know it. It's kind of it's lovely. He's a Polish author. I think he's dead now. He wrote a lot of kind of very humorous things. And there's one episode where Ion Tichy, for some reason, he's like this bumbling astronaut who's just flying around in a rotten spaceship, and he somehow gets to represent the human race at this big conference, which is like the UN but for the whole of the cosmos, and there's all these other people, and the question is actually, is the human race going to be admitted to take part in their big club, you know, in the UN? And everybody says, no, look at them, they mess everything up, you know, they don't even know how to control like nuclear power yet and stuff, we can't admit them, you know, and anyway, who knows, there must be some low life, you know, and we don't want to have anything to do with them because they're so horrible. And then they want to go for a vote, you know, and everybody wants, like, no, we're not going to admit the humans, they're idiots, you know. and then at some stage, some evidence is being presented that makes clear that the humans didn't develop out of chance through life on Earth, but like some 4 billion years ago, one of the other races who's part of the club actually stopped on Earth, and they had eaten some bad goulash, and they actually they actually threw up on Earth, you know, because the food was bad. And that was the source for the development of human life. And then they realized, okay, damn, you know, actually we made this race, you know, it's one of us. So they're kind of, and then they're forced to admit them into the club because it's their fault. Really.
Yeah, I also, it reminds me of the, I just heard that some company wanted to get a, how do you say, a patent?
Patent.
To get a patent on a genetic code of a group of people living somewhere remote in the jungle, and somebody found out that this company just took this original genetic code to have a patent on that.
Wow.
And I mean, I'm really not into it, and I really don't know how it what's happening there with these patents on genetic codes at the moment, but it sounds quite crazy. Yeah. And also there was this university a study on by the University of Santa Barbara. They wanted to make a research on cheating, and they had some Harvard students on one side making a test with them, and then they made a test with a group, a remote group in the jungle somewhere, to have so used this group as a kind of zero level to compare things, like really to say, okay, let's see what civilization or society in a global society makes out of that. And they found out that it's kind of the same thing. So everybody would do the same thing.
Bikin dan luyu.
Ya.
Lagi satu wah. Warnai. Bikin liput bunga.
Ya. Bikin liput bunga. Dalam tali dan luyu. Tu warnai.
Bahkan tu ini dah biasa negeri kayu. Mestilah madaya kayu. Jelanya ini, kami jelanya ini, kalian kalian makan, iya, dan kena di mana?
Shall we go to our friends from Ecuador?
Yes. Oído salvaje, the wild ear.
Yeah.
From one wild place to the next.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you too. Thank you
for coming in. It's very interesting showing this, playing this piece for us. That's the nice thing of the biennial. You have all sorts of interesting people running in. So tell us again, where is your exhibition? When does it open?
It opens on October 4th at the Passo das Arches.
Passo das Arches. Yeah, you pronounce it pretty well.
Yeah, at
USP. Universidade, na cidade universitária, mm-hmm. They call it University City, University mm-hmm. City.
And who doesn't make it to the opening can also come a day later on the 5th in the evening. I do a kind of tour, mm-hmm. so we'll talk about the same thing again.
Artist guided tour.
Yeah, through the exhibition.
Nice. Thanks very much, Clemens.
Thank you. Bye.
Agora, com 10 minutinhos de atraso, vamos para o quarto programa do Centro Experimental Oído Salvaje, que é baseado no Equador, e o programa chama Antenas Intervenciones.